Blog Talk Radio.
Michelle Hollinger, and I want to thank you all for joining me for another session where we are discussing sisterhood. We are, of course, discussing the book, the paperback book, The Sisterhood Exchange. And over the past several weeks, we've dived into the first part, part one, which is the sisterhood of self. And tonight's session is actually the last chapter in part one before we get into part two, which is sister to sister, which is essentially the relationships that we have with each other. And part one, the book is structured in two parts because the way that we interact with ourselves, the sisterhood of self, determines not only our quality of life, but it also determines how we interact with other women. So that's the gist of why the book is separated into part one, the sisterhood of self, and then part two, which we'll start next week, is sister to sister. And if you'd like to call into the show to ask a question or share a comment or a brilliant insight, the number to do that is 646-595-2081. I'd like to invite you, if you are online, to please click on the blue follow tab on the website for the radio show. That helps me to stay in touch with you. If there's any changes to the show, whenever the show is going to air, you will get a reminder if you're a follower. So if you would do that for me, that would be a big help, clicking on the blue follow tab on the website. And if you're on Facebook, I invite you to like the Facebook page for the Sisterhood Exchange and to check it out. Check it out. I put some really uplifting and positive things on that page as it relates to sisterhood. We've seen sisterhood disparaged enough. We need to be in constant uplift mode as it relates to sisterhood, and that's what I do on the Sisterhood Exchange page on Facebook. The other thing that I'd like to invite you to do, if you haven't done so already, is to get a copy of the book. The book is available on Amazon.com. It's also available, if you want it autographed, on my website, which is MichelleHollinger.com. On Amazon, you can get it in two different formats. You can get it in an ebook format for $4.99, or you can get it as a paperback for $12 on Amazon. On my website, the autographed copies are $10. What I also discovered recently is that it's also available at independent bookstores across the country. So if there's an independent bookstore near you, and I certainly hope so because they are such gems, such gifts to communities, I hope that you'll go into the bookstore and look for the Sisterhood Exchange. If they don't have it, ask them to order it for you, and they will. Or you can go to your independent bookstore's website to order the book. I am promoting the book heavily on this show, and I'm about to roll out the second phase of the marketing for the book because it's just one of those books that's a game changer, and I think that a lot of women are just ready to read what's in the book because they're just at that space where they know that there's more to sisterhood than what we've seen, you know, predominantly on radio show. I'm sorry, on what's that other R thing? Reality shows. I can barely even remember it. Reality shows on social media to some extent. And just in general, you know, the positive aspects of sisterhood don't always get the news time and the space in magazines and in other venues as some of the negative varieties of sisterhood. And so this book is all about really getting down to the real nitty-gritty of what sisterhood is and talking about it from a perspective where the book doesn't just promote, you know, sisterhood for the sake of promoting sisterhood. Sisterhood is a wonderful thing, and sisterhood is something that women should embrace, because it's a gift that we are born with. We're born with the opportunity to engage in sisterhood at a high level. And when I say at a high level, it's at a level that not only, you know, kind of redefines the way women get along with each other and the way that women support each other and the way that women interact with each other, but it's a game changer for the women who understand just how powerful and important sisterhood is. And so, yeah, I strongly encourage you to pick up the Sisterhood Exchange if you haven't already done so. It's a quick read. It's a deep read. It's a powerful read. The feedback that I get from women is that, you know, they reread the book several times. There are certain chapters that really call out to them, and they, you know, spend more time with certain chapters, and they end up buying additional copies for the sister friends in their lives. So I feel real good about what poured through me and ended up in this book, and I just encourage you, if you haven't already done so, to pick up a copy. So, yeah, what we've done over the past several weeks, as I mentioned, is to go into part one, and I'll do a brief recap before we go into to tonight's chapter, so that those of you who may be joining us for the first time tonight will have an idea of the foundation of the Sisterhood Exchange before we go into tonight's really powerful discussion. This is, and I say this every week, this is one of my favorite chapters, because it just really goes in on how important it is for us to embrace the ability to simply be, to simply be. And I'll get into that discussion when we get to that chapter, but I'll do a brief recap first. So, yeah, we're talking about the Sisterhood Exchange, and we're doing the paperback version. The book has a hard copy, which was the first edition to be published. And as I've mentioned before, I thought that I was done with that, and when it got around time to publish the paperback, you know, typically the paperback has the same content but different packaging. This paperback has entirely different content. It has what is in the hard copy, but some additional chapters and some additional information as it relates to sisterhood, because what I realized was that Spirit needed me to say a whole lot more on the subject, and it ended up being a two-part book. So the last few weeks we went over the preface for the book, which just gave a basic description of what sisterhood is and what it is in the life of a woman, and how as young girls, you know, what we're exposed to most is what determines how we see sisterhood, how we engage with sisterhood, how we act as it relates to sisterhood. If we grow up around women who don't understand the power of sisterhood, and those are women who you know, gossip about other women, who put down other women, who ridicule other women, it's because they don't recognize their own power. And so if you don't recognize your own power, you can't recognize anyone else's power. And so you operate from a false sense of self. And the preface went into that. It went into how if a girl is only exposed to that type of sisterhood, then she believes that that's all there is to sisterhood. She believes that until she's exposed to something different. And if as she's growing up, she is exposed to a different, more positive variety of sisterhood, then the likelihood that the negative variety of sisterhood, the likelihood that it will take hold of her, you know, in a stronger way than it could, if that's all she's exposed to, is lesser. It's not as strong. What I'm trying to say is if that's all she gets, then she thinks that that's all there is. And she normalizes that, and she internalizes that, and that's the way that she interacts with sisterhood. But if she, you know, goes to a neighbor's house, or, you know, if there are other relatives in her family, or perhaps at school, she sees, you know, teachers and female adults who understand sisterhood, and they demonstrate for her, they model for her, you know, a higher level of sisterhood. A girl who sees that, she understands that what she's been accustomed to seeing as relates to sister, she understands that that's not all there is. And so she can at some point make a decision whether she's going to embrace the lower energy sisterhood, or if she's going to embrace the higher energy sisterhood, right? And so essentially what the preface said was that's how that vicious cycle of negative sisterhood gets going, you know. A girl who's only exposed to that, and then she grows up and she becomes a woman who engages in this negative variety of sisterhood, right? And when whatever energy you exude, you know, based on your own personal beliefs about whatever the topic is, and in this case, of course, we're talking sisterhood. So that's the energy that you put out. You're operating from that false sense of self. You don't understand, you know, your own power. You haven't tapped into it. You don't even realize that you have it inside of you. And so you operate from that false sense of self. And because like energy attracts, you know, energy that's the same. Like energy attracts like energy. Women who operate from their false sense of self, they attract other women who are also operating from their false sense of self into their space, into their life, into their daily interactions. And so there's this vicious cycle of these women operating from their false sense of self, you know, and there's this negative energy going back and forth. There's the gossip, there's the backstabbing, there's the, you know, disparaging, there's the put downs, you know, and unless and until they recognize that there's a different way, and that different way is activating their sisterhood of self, which is what we also talked about in the preface, then a woman can live her entire life engaged in that low energy sisterhood, which is really a shame, which is really, you know, I won't say it's a wasted opportunity, but, you know, it's just pretty sad. It's just pretty sad. So the preface went into what the sisterhood of self is, you know, and I compared it to faith. Everybody is born with faith. Some people are under the misconception that only certain people have faith. And the thing to remember about faith is that it's not a religious quality. It's a spiritual quality that we're all born with. Now, whether we use our faith or not is the story. That's the key, whether we use our faith or not. You know, you've heard the biblical saying, it takes just a mustard seed size amount of faith and you can move mountains. And what happens with that is once you use that teeny weeny bit of faith and you see that you get results from it, you start to use it more. You exercise that faith muscle, and the more you use it, the stronger it gets. The more you use it, the stronger it gets, and you recognize that you can pull things into your existence. You recognize that you can take that risk because you trust that what's on the other side of the risk is for your highest good. Well, the sisterhood of self is similar to faith in that regard, because every woman has a sisterhood of self. Whether it's active or not is the key, and we can all activate our sisterhood of self by doing, you know, some very specific things. And I went into the seven principles of the sisterhood of self, and I'll review those with you now. Let me breathe. You guys hear me talking about deep breathing and how important it is, especially when we're having these kinds of conversations. But deep breathing is just is just a real effective de-stressor. If you're in traffic and you take a deep breath, it can help you to just, you know, maintain your sanity. And if you're about to go into an important meeting, take a few deep breaths. It will help you to connect with the truth of who you are, and you will go into that meeting and jam. Let me give you the seven principles of the SOS. The first one is, of course, that every woman has an SOS that is either active or inactive. The second principle is that the SOS is activated by spending time in the silence daily. And I can't talk about that enough, you know. It is one of the most important things that we can do as women, as human beings, period. It's one of the most important things that we can do, especially in this day and age, in this kind of, you know, fast-paced microwave society that we live in. Everything is on, you know, it's just on speed dial. And, you know, the notion that we should be preoccupied with, you know, totally engaged with things that are external, That gets reinforced day in and day out with social media, you know, with the TV shows, with, you know, everything else that's going on, you know, in our external world. And, yes, we are supposed to be engaged in things in our external world, but there's supposed to be a balance. You know, self-care, a huge part of self-care is spending time in the silence, because you have to give yourself a chance to hear your own thoughts. You have to give yourself a chance to hear what's going on inside of you, independent of anything else that's going on, you know? And so that's one of the main reasons. Those are some of the main reasons. that spending time in the silence daily is so crucial to activating your sisterhood of self. Self-forgiveness is the third principle. Self-forgiveness elevates an active SOS. So once your SOS is activated, you really have to start, and it's not even something that you have to do consciously, because once you start to spend time in the silence, it's just one of those things that you give to yourself. It's a gift. You just start to realize, you know what? I really need to cut myself some slack. I really need to, you know, stop beating myself up about this thing that I did not do in my past, or this thing that I did do in my past, but it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, or, you know, whatever the case may be, you know. And one of the chapters in the book really talks about just really how important it is for us to stop beating ourselves up about past mistakes and poor judgment. There's nothing we can do about it except learn from it, right? And so, yeah, the third principle talks about how important it is for self-forgiveness to become a part of, you know, the gift that you give yourself. The principle number four is the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. So, you know, once you get into the habit of spending time in the silence and you gift yourself self-forgiveness, it's really important just to start paying attention to the words that you're speaking, because you speak things into existence. We all do. Every human beings speak things into existence. And what we speak about is based on what we think about. Our thoughts determine what our conversation is with ourselves and with other people. Our thoughts determine how we speak, whether we speak negatively for the most part or whether we speak positively, whether we go through life with that glass half empty, you know, where we're constantly complaining about what we don't have, what went wrong, why it went wrong, why me, woe is me, I'm a victim, my past did this, that, and the other to me, and I'm still replaying it over and over and over and over again. Or if we go through life looking at what's right, looking at what we have, looking at, you know, the bright side of things, being willing to understand that appearances do not tell the whole story, you know, the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. Once you activate your SOS, there's work that you have to do to sustain it, and that's a part of it, paying attention to your thoughts and the words that come out of your mouth. An active SOS thrives in gratitude. That's the fifth principle. Gratitude is a game changer, an absolute game changer. And the more that you are immersed in gratitude, the sweeter your life is, because gratitude just really helps you to see things from a different perspective. And one of the chapters that we talked about, gratitude and the gratitude groove, I encouraged you guys to keep a gratitude journal. And it's just really an effective way to help you to anchor gratitude in your life. Because, you know, many of you already go through your day counting your blessings. You recognize that you are truly blessed, right? But when you keep a gratitude journal and you write it down at the end of the day, there's something that happens, you know, with your subconscious mind when you put things in writing. And when you put things down that you're grateful for, that's so powerful. It sends a message to your subconscious mind to continue bringing experiences and people and opportunities into your life that you will be grateful for. Gratitude is a game changer. It changes the way you see things. I'm telling you, it is so, so powerful. So, so powerful. Principle number six is an active SOS provides access to inner splendor, which reveals life purpose. There's no way possible for you to discover what you're here for, the purpose that has your name on it, your unique mission in life. There's no way for you to discover what that is unless you're spending time in the silence, unless you have activated your SOS, right? There's just no way, because if you're listening to everybody else's voice, if you are, you know, consumed with the lives that people on the reality shows are living, if you are on Facebook, you know, constantly on Twitter, constantly on Instagram, constantly, then there's really no way for you to tap into your inner splendor. Your inner splendor is inside of you. It's been there all along, waiting for you to pay attention to it. And unless you are spending time in the silence, unless you are doing the things that you need to do to activate your SOS, you will not engage that inner splendor in a way that it can just reveal itself to you and start to just kind of take over, help you to surrender to it, and show you the steps to take to bring your life purpose into fruition, to fruition. Your inner splendor has your life purpose within it, and it's just powerful. You have, man, if each and every one of us realized what we had inside of us, and we just, you know, spent at least a portion of our day just nurturing that, just, you know, doing the work to engage and activate it and just allow it to pour forth, whew, Lord have mercy, our lives would just be way different. I am a work in progress, and I spend a lot of time in the silence. I can go a whole day without turning on the TV. My family thinks I'm kind of loony sometimes. But once you get a taste of what's inside of you, once you get a taste of what God is pouring through you, you know, and you just see just how sacred your life is. You understand that there are things that you are here to do, and your inner splendor, it guides the way. It has a light. There's a light inside of you that's so bright, and the more you engage it, the brighter it gets, because things just become clearer and clearer to you. Things start to make sense. You understand why you're drawn to certain types of books and, you know, certain kinds of music, and why certain people are in your life, and you understand, you know, why certain hobbies are important to you. You understand why you're passionate about certain things. It all starts to make sense. The more you spend time in the silence, and once you get serious about activating your SOS, your life changes. It just does. And then the seventh principle is that the quality of a woman's SOS determines the quality of all her other sisterhood exchanges. The way that I treat other women, it is based on how I treat myself. The way I speak to other women is based on how I speak to myself. You know, if another woman is successful and I feel jealousy about it, I'm disconnected from myself. And there's a whole conversation that I can have about jealousy, because when we feel jealous about another woman, you know, another woman's success, another woman's appearance, another woman's life, it's a clue to us that there's some work that we have to do in that particular area. It's really a gift. And it requires that we put our ego aside, and that in the silence we think about, okay, so-and-so got a promotion on her job, you know, and I felt a twinge of jealousy about it. If you have the courage to put your ego aside and to spend some time just exploring where that jealousy came from, chances are you will realize that in order for you to even feel jealous about that, it's because you have the same qualities inside of you, and you just have not done the work. You just have not, you know, put in the energy to activate those gifts and those qualities, and seeing another woman who has, you know, it kind of makes you feel a certain kind of way. That's what the jealousy is. But we, you know, when we just stop at the jealousy and we think, you know, we beat ourselves up about that, and, you know, we have these negative feelings about the other woman, when we stop right there, we cheat ourselves out of some rich, juicy growth and development as it relates to being a woman. So I kind of digress into that whole jealousy, admiration thing, but it's deep. When I got the realization about that, I was like, oh, my goodness, that makes all the sense in the world. It really does, because when you think about it from a spiritual perspective, and if you are willing to believe that, you know, at the soul level, we're all connected, all right? So if in order for me to feel a certain kind of way, a strong pull, and jealousy has a strong pull to it. In order for me to feel that strong pull about somebody else, it's because the thing in her that's causing the jealousy, I have it in me too. I just haven't done the work. I just have not spent time with it so that it can grow and be what it is designed to be. That's what that whole jealousy thing is. I need to write a book about that. Okay, so let me breathe. Okay, y'all, because I have a lot of books left to write in me, you know, and I am determined. I am determined with a capital D to deliver everything that God is blessing me with, every insight, every bit of knowledge and wisdom. I am determined to share it. Every bit of creativity, every bit of my imagination, I am determined. I am going to leave this earth with nothing left inside of me. You will not catch any of my talents and gifts in the cemetery. And I just encourage you guys to do the same thing. All right, so let's see. Let me give the number again in case you guys want to call in with a question or comment. The number is 646-595-2081, and you're listening to the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. We're up to the last chapter of Part 1, and that chapter is called The Need to Be. I love that chapter. That chapter is so sweet. That chapter is so awesome. And it had to be the last chapter because, you know, as this book poured through me, I didn't try to put it in a particular order. That's just the way Spirit works. God was just, you know, just pouring it through. And, you know, each chapter builds upon the previous chapter. And once I got through with all of the different chapters in Part 1, the need to be, that chapter, the content for that chapter just rolled out, you know, like with ease and with grace. And it was one of the most moving chapters for me to write. So one of the other chapters that we talked about was Disconnect to Connect. And if you have the book, that's on page 19. And that one just really went into, you know, how important it is for us to just take some time in the silence on a daily basis, you know, just to disconnect from all the external stuff. And to make it a priority, you know, to decide that, you know, I'm going to wake up a little bit earlier in the morning or, you know, at some point during the day or, you know, sometime in the evening. I met a woman recently. I'm doing a special section for the South Florida Times. I write for them, and I'm doing their health and fitness special section. And I met a woman, awesome woman, who meditates twice a day, every morning and every evening. And she just has some really powerful things to say about meditation. Her name is Valerie Crawford, by the way. And I'll let you guys know when that special section comes out because I got an opportunity and I really had to remind myself that, okay, Michelle, you are writing for the South Florida Times. You are not writing for the Sisterhood Exchange. Add some men to this section. So I do have one man in the section right now, and I think I need to add at least one more. But, yeah, I met some of the most amazing women. Some of the women I already knew, but I got to know them a little bit better. You know, I got to know a little bit more about a woman who's a vegetarian. That's Yvette Harris, marketing maven. Suzanne McDowell does hot yoga, and I got to talk to her about that and to hear how effective it is and how powerful it is in her life. Kaylin James, who, by the way, was the first black Miss Alabama, is going to also be in that section. She teaches a class, an exercise class, at Iron Fitness Studio in the Upper East Side, and I got to know a little bit more about Kaylin. I just really had a chance to just deepen my connection with some really outstanding women who are in South Florida, and I'll let you guys know when that section is out, because you'll get a chance to not only hear or read rather more about them, you'll get a chance to see the amazing pictures that my awesome photographer daughter Alexandra took. That young lady is doing the thing behind the camera. Okay, so that's enough of my self promotion for my special section with the South Florida Times. That is SFLtimes.com. That's one of the most amazing newspapers that you could possibly pick up, and I encourage you guys to do that because it's a really good read from cover to cover. Yeah. All right. So one of the other chapters that we talked about, Your Thoughts, Your Life, and I talked about that a little bit as I went through the principles. One of the things to remember as it relates to our thoughts, anything that's going on in your life, it started with your thoughts. Anything at all that is going on in your life has its origin in your thoughts, and that can either excite you or that can scare you. And the exciting thing about that is because anything that's going on in your life has its origin in your thoughts, you can change your thoughts and change what's going on in your life. I make that sound simple, and it's not, but it's really that simple. You know, I'm being oxymoronic right now, but it really is that simple. It takes time. It takes consistency. It takes practice. Most of all, it takes intention. But yeah, your thoughts, man. If all of us really, really, really embraced just how powerful our thoughts are game changers. All right, so another chapter we talked about, which is on page 23, is listen to your inner critic and then tell her that she's been demoted. So, yeah, one of the things that happens, it already happens now. We have this voice inside of us that stops us from doing important things in our lives. And, you know, I call her Miss Thing. And she shows up when we start to take steps outside of our comfort zone. She shows up when we're about to take a risk. She shows up when we are about to go back to school, start the small business, go after the promotion. She shows up when we are about to step outside of our comfort zone. And the thing about Miss Thing is she's doing her job, because to her, anything new equals unsafe, even though to us we know that in order to grow, we have to do new stuff. We have to step out of our comfort zone. And so this chapter talks about how important it is to retrain her, because you can't silence her. Really successful people, they have not silenced their inner critic. They have just retrained her to be a part of the team. They help her to recognize that, look, I am the coach of this team. You are one of my players. Here are the plays that I need you to execute. This is what I need you to do. Here's what needs to happen. And the way to get to that point with her is you have to listen to what it is she's saying. And then you have to listen with a critical ear, because you have to determine whether there's any truth to what she's saying. And you do that by holding it up to the light, you know, by analyzing, by critiquing what it is that she's saying, because we've gotten into the habit of not challenging her. And so she can say things that sound like a legitimate reason that we shouldn't go back to school. She may give us an excuse that sounds like a legitimate explanation for why we should not open the small business, you know, or seek the promotion, or whatever the dream or the goal is. She has had such a comfortable place within our minds that she sounds like a friend. But when you look back over your life and you realize that she has talked you out of doing, you know, some really important things with your life, number one, don't beat yourself up about it. Because when we know better, we do better, right? And so what I'm encouraging you to do is to understand that this voice, which sounds like a friend, is really there to stop us from growing. Because, again, she equates anything new with being unsafe, right? But mediocrity is safe. You can't embrace excellence in your life by engaging in mediocrity, by playing it safe. And so that chapter really just talks about why, and you'll get a chance to do it in the silence, because once she sees that you're carving out this time to listen to your own thoughts every day, oh, she will try to crash your party. Yes, she will. She will try to crash your party, and she's going to start throwing all these thoughts. Let those thoughts just roll through your brain, just like clouds passing through the sky. Just don't try to fight them. Just let them pass through. But as it relates to that voice that tries to stop you from growing, stop you from accessing your inner splendor and realizing your true purpose, you've got to hold that up to the light, and you've got to examine it, and you've got to question it. Sometimes what she says may have some merit to it. If it does, use it. Take that and use it to propel yourself forward. If what she's saying is not true, throw that crap away. Tell her, you know what? Nope, not this time. I can't use that. So no, we're not gonna let that become a part of the dynamic, right? So yeah, that chapter went into that, and then the next chapter was if you can't say something nice. And, again, that went into, you know, how important it is. Just pay attention to the words that we're speaking, you know. The next chapter went into if we knew then what we know now, that was a doozy, because, you know, you see on Facebook sometimes, if you could say two words to your younger self, what would it be? My two words are thank you. And typically when you see a post like that or you see a magazine article that says, if you could write a letter to your younger self, you know, what kind of letter would you write to yourself? More often than not, people are writing letters or giving words to the younger self, criticizing them for not having done, you know, something different, or for not being, you know, better than they were. And that to me is just really unfair. It's cruel, too, because you can't do anything about it. So your past is over and done. And to look back at it, you know, from a critical vantage point, and the only way that you look at your past is to beat yourself up about what you did and do or who you were not, it's a waste of your valuable energy, because you can't, that's energy that you can't use in the here and now to move you forward. That's energy that you cannot use in the here and now to manifest what it is you are here to manifest now. I suggest that the only time you look to your past is to grow and to learn from it. And one of the most valuable things that you can do is to look to your past and look at what you did right. Look at what you accomplished. Look at what you overcame. Look at what you were able to do with who you were. You know what I mean? That we're so quick as human beings to just beat ourselves up about what we didn't do, what we didn't have, you know, what we didn't consider, et cetera, et cetera. But if we could shift that and look to our past and say, oh, okay, by the time I was this age, I'd accomplished this, that, and the other. You know, there were some consequences that could have happened to me as a result of this, and I did not go down that path. You know, look at what you did do. You know, if you graduated high school, pat yourself on the back. Graduated college, pat yourself on the back. If you didn't graduate college, you stepped foot on a college campus, pat yourself on the back. Look at what you did do. It's time to celebrate yourself instead of beating yourself up, because it does no good. Celebrating who you are, that builds you up. That reminds you of your character. That reminds you of what you've been able to accomplish. You know, that serves a great purpose, a wonderful purpose. Beating yourself up serves no purpose except to keep you stuck, because you can't grow from that. How do you change your present circumstances by beating yourself up about something that happened 5, 10, 15, 20, however many years ago? How do you change your current circumstances? How do you make your current circumstances better by beating yourself up about what you didn't do or what you did do or who you were or who you were not? No. I suggest, you know, becoming an archaeologist and looking at your past, if you're going to look at your past, for what you did right, for what you accomplished, and write it down. You want to write a letter, write that kind of letter and say, thank you for, you know, and make a list of all the things that you accomplished. You will blow your own mind, I'm telling you. And it's really important. Okay, let me take a deep breath. Yeah. This stuff is so important to me, and I know that it's my passion, it's my purpose. A friend told me recently that my voice is my gift, and I embrace that. I really do, because I recognize that everything that has happened in my life happened for a reason. And I recognize that, you know, I've been able to not allow it to define me, because I had some tragedies and traumatic things that happened in my childhood. And I recognize that there's a part of me, you know, inside, that sacred space, that still small space that was untouched by anything. It was not touched. It was intact. It was always there waiting for me to discover it and nurture it and develop it. And I spent a number of years doing that, so much so that I have a lot to share with people. And I just, I'm on cloud nine right now talking about this stuff right here. Okay, so the next chapter that we went into a few weeks ago was the gratitude groove, and I talked about that a little bit. Get that gratitude journal. If you haven't already started, man, I'm telling you, it's a life changer. Focusing on gratitude. When you wake up in the morning knowing that at the end of the day, you will be required, and it's a self-requirement, you know, something that you agree to for yourself, you will be writing down 5 things that you're grateful for. The way you look at your day changes. You know, things that have happened in your day for I don't know how long, you start to notice, you know, oh, my goodness, this right here is pretty awesome. There are things that happen day in and day out, but because we're on fast pace, speed dial, you know, we miss it. And, you know, what's that slogan, stop and smell the roses? Yeah, we have to do that. We really do, and it just really, it makes a difference, because what you focus on most expands in your life, you know. And if you want more good things, you want to attract more good things into your life, focus on the good that's already in your life, and that's what's going to happen. Okay, so last week, actually it wasn't last week, I skipped out on you guys last week because it was my daughter's birthday, and I apologize, I tried to pre-record the show and upload it, but for whatever reason, I guess I wasn't tech savvy and I did not do it correctly, so it didn't play the way that it should. So those of you who tried to tune in last week and got nothing but, you know, a little short snippet from me, I apologize. So, yeah, but the week before, we talked about decide that you're worthy, this whole worthiness thing, which is, you know, extremely important because, you know, if we are unable to embrace our worthiness, then the goodness that is just lined up to pour forth into our lives, lined up to just show up, it can't come because unworthiness is like a repellent. It's like a goodness repellent. You know, your goodness cannot show up in your life if you don't feel that you deserve it. If you don't feel worthy of your good, it will not show up in your life. It needs your permission to show up in your life. It really, really does. It really does. And I said that each one of these chapters builds on the previous chapter. That chapter about your thoughts and your words, that has a whole lot to do with your with how you see your worthiness. Whole lot to do with how you see your worthiness. And you know, if your thoughts are of the variety that you don't deserve goodness in your life, and it may not show, it may not, you know, just come across as explicit as that. You know, your thoughts may not be, okay, so and so, you don't deserve this. But the energy of the thought conveys unworthiness, right? And if you don't get a handle on that, you will not be able to manifest the maximum amount of goodness in your life. Right, and I'm speaking from experience because I have had to deal with my own share of unworthiness. I've had to really, you know, hold it up to a light, really get down to the nitty gritty, and really understand that, you know, just because I am, not because of anything I did, you know, just because I am, each one of us, we are worthy. We are worthy of goodness. We are worthy of a wonderful, beautiful life, and embracing that sense of worthiness is a game changer because the goodness that is poised to flow into your life, it just gets on a major rush and it flows, you know, unabashedly. It really does. If you've ever heard stories of, you know, say a person who wins the lottery, right? They win millions of dollars and then in the next few years they're broke. It has to do with that whole unworthiness thing. They did not have the internal worthiness power that convinced them, that said to them that they were worthy of those millions of dollars. And so their energy and their actions, you know, and I'm trying to really simplify it, and this is essentially what it boils down to. They you know, had to go back to what they knew. They had to go back to wherever their sense of worthiness was, and their external world has to be a reflection of that. And so if internally they're not feeling worthy, you know, all these millions of dollars usually that conveys a sense of worthiness. But if you're not feeling worthy within, then your external world is going to reflect that, and so the money has to go. Or conversely, if the money's not there now, the money won't come. And so, you know, as we deal with money issues, that's one of the key things that we have to deal with. We have to look at that worthiness issue and start to, you know, to beef it up. And, you know, that chapter talked about making a decision for worthiness, deciding that you are worthy, because that's where it starts. That's where it starts. You make the decision, and you don't, you know, just not with a snap of a finger, you know, just get to a point where you feel worthy. But when you make the decision, that indicates that you are willing to embrace your worthiness, that you have an intention to stand in your worthiness. And so your inner self starts to help you to understand, you know, just because you are, just because you exist, you are worthy. And the daily silence that you start to spend with yourself, you will just get that reinforcement. You will start to get that reinforcement. And then there are other things that will just start to happen in your life that will reinforce that you are worthy. Simple as that. All right. So yeah, that chapter went into why we have to stop looking outside of ourselves, stop looking, you know, in our external environment for our sense of worthiness, for our sense for you know, for validation. Every human being needs validation. I don't even want to, you know, joke around with you about that. I don't even want to, you know, pretend that that's not real. Every single one of us needs validation. It goes back to our childhood. When you see a little girl or a little boy and they say, look, mommy, you know, watch me do this. Or, look, daddy, watch me do this. Look at what I can do. That's a need for validation. And it's real. And it's powerful. And it doesn't go away because we become adults. We just look for it in different ways. And it goes back to a degree of worthiness. And the more that we go into the silence and we nurture our own worthiness from the inside out, you know, that external worthiness, that the need for it, is not as strong. It's not as strong as it used to be. Okay? So let me take a deep breath before I go into the chapter for tonight, which is the need to be. Okay, let me give the number again in case you guys want to call in with a question or comment, brilliant insight, or say, Michelle, what the heck are you talking about? The number is 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you want to join me on the air, okay? And if you're just joining me, this is, of course, the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club, and we're on the last chapter of part 1 of the book, which is The Need to Be. And I'm going to go ahead and read that chapter, and then we'll go back and discuss some of the key points. Okay, so this is on page 41 if you have the book, and the chapter is, again, called The Need to Be. Deciding that you're worthy leads to the conscious decision to be, not to do, not to have, to be on your own side, to be the hero of your story, to be willing to believe that it exists, and then welcome the something more that being fulfills. The need to be is not easily quieted. It emerges involuntarily, sometimes when you least expect it. It shows up as an aching for something beyond what you've experienced, something that you can't quite put your finger on, something that you instinctively know that you deserve. But everything's going well, you question. What right do I have to want something more? What right do you have to expect to fill this unidentified urging with something you cannot seem to identify? Especially if your relationships, your health, your finances, your life have all the ingredients that make for what is traditionally called a happy existence. And if they're not, you believe that if you could only fix your relationships, your health, your finances, your life, then this unidentified urging, this insatiable longing will be satisfied. Here's the delicious paradox that the need to be presents. Fixing any of those external things will not satisfy the longing, but satisfying the longing is the only thing that can fix the external things. Again, from within, out, as within, out. Okay, next paragraph, rather. The secret to satisfying the longing exists within your sisterhood of self, which operates on the premise that everything that you need to be the woman that you are here to be is within you. Honoring your SOS expands your unique territory and fills it from the inside out by connecting with and ultimately unleashing your inner splendor. What is this inner splendor, you ask, and where do I get one? You were born with it. You have had glimpses of it, moments of immersion into it that felt blissful, weird even. It is the unidentified urging that feels so elusive, so unattainable, so out of your reach. And here's another paradox. It appears unreachable because you've been looking for it in the wrong places. The only way to reach it is by going within, in the silence, a lot. Often enough that it recognizes you, that you recognize each other. Once you recognize each other, this going within will become a healthy obsession, taking its rightful place alongside breathing and brushing your teeth. And when you come to wonder how you went so long without this life-affirming habit, you will discover that the urge is identified, the longing is soothed, and your need to be is quieted because you've been so busy being. Whew, I love this chapter because essentially what it's saying is that there comes a time in our life, And it is not specific to any particular age, although I do believe that, you know, a lot of women usually hit it, you know, after they reach the big 40. Some women hit it earlier and some women hit it later, you know. But essentially you hit this space in your life where you no longer feel the need to apologize for who you are or to really have to explain to anybody who you are or why you are the way that you are. You just start to fall in love with yourself in such a way. And I don't mean that in any, like, arrogant sense or conceited way, but, you know, in the way that we're supposed to love ourselves, in the deep, sacred way that we're supposed to love, honor, and revere ourselves. We're supposed to love, honor, and revere. We're supposed to love, honor, and revere ourselves. Not in a way that puts anybody else down, not in a way that requires any comparisons or contrast with anybody else. We're supposed to arrive at this space in our life where we just recognize that who we are is good enough. We arrive at this space where we just decide, you know what, that's enough of the beating myself up. That's enough of shortchanging myself by shrinking so that somebody else will not feel insecure. That's enough of me pretending not to be as sharp, not to be as brilliant, not to be as whatever, fill in the blank, as I am so that other people will feel comfortable around me. You get to a point where I almost cursed. I can't curse. But you get to a point where that ish just doesn't matter anymore. And that's what the need to be essentially is about, okay? And I am telling you that if you have not arrived at that place yet, if you read the chapters in this book and you spend some time on those seven principles of the SOS, I'm telling you, you will arrive at the place in your life where you will, it's not even a conscious decision, because once you start doing this inner work, you know, and you start developing that faith muscle, that SOS muscle inside of you, there's something that just clicks, and it goes into autopilot, and it recognizes that, okay, she's ready now. She is ready for, you know, this inner splendor to start to flow at full force, at a pace that's comfortable for her, but consistently and reliably. She's at a space now where her truth can be demonstrated, you know. And once that thing clicks inside of you, man, you just have tunnel vision. You can't even see foolishness anymore. You know, the people that you start to attract into your circle, they're people who have the same qualities. Because remember what I said about that energy. Like energy attracts you. People who are at a different level, you know, and it's not to say that their level is wrong, but they're at a level that you can no longer relate to, they're going to start to find you boring. You're going to start to find them boring. They're going to just kind of drift out of your life. And you're going to start to create, and we go into that in sister to sister in the part two of the book about, you know, how when you do the work in part one, when you go through each one of these chapters and you really spend time with your beautiful self and you tap into all of your awesomeness, all of your innate power that you were born with but has rested there until you started to engage and started to nurture it and started to allow it to be all that it is. When you start doing that work, that love that you have for yourself, it just goes to this level that is just, you find the words to make your yeses mean yes and your noes mean no. You are just so willing. You recognize that you do yourself a disservice when you are not being authentic to yourself. That need to be, it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. It makes any goal or dream that you're working to, it just makes that sweeter, clearer, because you recognize that, you know, that the important part of it is the journey. You know, what happens at the destination, that's good too, but the journey is the part where we get to peel back the layers and get to know who we really are and what we're really made of. The journey is what gives all of that to us. And the need to be, oh, my God, my prayer for anybody who is listening is that if you have not already experienced the need to be, the need to just exist in your own unique splendor, let me read that first chapter again. Deciding that you're worthy leads to the conscious decision to be, not to do, not to have, to be on your own side, to be the hero of your story, to be willing to believe that it exists and then welcome the something more that being fulfills. My prayer is that each and every one of you, if you have not already experienced it, that you experience it sooner than later. And this is the other thing, too. When it starts to unfold within you, when it starts to do what it do, when it starts to, you know, to manifest within you and it starts to pour forth, you can't stop it. And the other thing is you will know it. You will absolutely positively know it because it feels right, it feels sweet, and it feels powerful, but not the kind of power where, you know, you have power over another person. You have power over the person that you used to be. You recognize her gifts and qualities and everything that she has to offer. You recognize that, but then you also see where you've grown. You also see where things that used to bother you don't bother you anymore. You also see where, you know, where once upon a time you may have been passive in, you know, a particular situation where it's just really easy for you to speak up. It's really easy for you to speak your truth. It's easy, and you can't even stop the words from coming out of your mouth sometimes. So you know, you guys know I'm speaking from experience. Okay, I have to stop laughing so I can get back on track. But yeah, it just, whew, my goodness, it's fun too. And sometimes it's hilarious. It really is. Okay, let me go back to some more of this chapter because this book is, I mean, this. Well, you know what, this book is awesome. This book is amazing, and this particular chapter is one of the chapters that makes it so. You know what, that's crazy because every single chapter makes this book awesome and amazing. Okay, let's see. This need to be is not easily quieted. That's what I was just saying. So, you mean, you get to a certain point where things just come out of your mouth and but, it, you know, it's not rude and it's not disrespectful. And you laugh at yourself because you're like, whoa, what took me so long to be able to say that, you know? But, yes, it just helps you to just be authentic, to just, you know, stand in your truth and to speak it from a position of internal authentic power, you know? So, yeah, the need to be is not easily quieted. It emerges involuntarily, sometimes when you least expect it. It shows up as an aching for something beyond what you've experienced, something that you can't quite put your finger on, something that you instinctively know that you deserve. When you hear people say, I'm trying to find myself, that's what it's about. That's what it's about. It's not anything externally, you know? It's not anything externally. Here's the thing, though. When you embrace that need to be, when you allow it to flourish within you, you know, because you've done all these other steps, you start to spend time in the silence, you forgave yourself for, you know, past mistakes and poor judgment, you stop beating yourself up about things over which you have no control. If it's already happened, there's nothing you can do to change it, right? So you might as well forgive yourself for it. And self-forgiveness helps make your present and your future sweeter. Can't do anything about the past. You really can't even do anything about the future, but your present moment determines what your future is. You know, so like right now, what's the last thought that you were just thinking? What was that thought? Now is that thought helping you or is that thought harming you? That's one of the things that we talked about, how important it is to just, you know, on occasion. And there was an activity that I gave some homework a few months ago where you guys were to set your watch or your smartphone or whatever, you know, for every hour. And when it went off, at the time that it went off, you just paid attention to the thought that was in your mind at the time. And, you know, one of the most powerful things that you ever do is to pay attention to your thoughts, right? So what was I saying about the need to be? Yeah, it's just powerful, it's powerful, it's powerful. And when you do this internal work, you know, when you spend time in the silence, when you forgive yourself, when you start to pay attention to your thoughts and your words, and you recognize that there's a correlation to what's going on in your life, it's no coincidence. It's really no coincidence. And when you understand the power of your thoughts and your words, you know, you can create things in your life that you actually want to happen. You can set an intention, and you can use affirmations. You can use, you know, just the power of affirmative prayer. You can use your thoughts and your words. You can create. There's a you guys have probably heard of this thing called a vision board. Some people call it a treasure map, where you can, you know, get a big poster board. You cut out pictures of things that you want to see manifest in your life. You know, you can cut out words of qualities that you want to embrace, that you want to strengthen in your life. You know, if you want to become more courageous, you want to develop more confidence. You know, you cut out those big words like courage and confidence. And if there's some tangible things, because I'm not against the accumulation of tangible things, the only thing that I like to say about that is, don't allow those things to define you. And when you have embraced your worthiness, when you have arrived at this place where you understand your need to be and your need to be has kicked in, rather, you have those things and you can enjoy those things because they don't define you. Because those things can disappear, and if they do, and if those things, you know, were what was happening for you as far as if those things defined you, if those things brought you your sense of self, if those things bring you your sense of worthiness and those things disappear, who are you? Who are you without the things? But if you are operating from the inside out, if you are nurturing your inner splendor, discovering your life purpose, you know, standing in your truth, being your authentic self, activating and living from your SOS, having things is fun, you know? Having things, having a nice car, a nice house, having the external, that's fun. You can enjoy it because it doesn't define you. And this is the thing, too. When it doesn't define you, the likelihood that you'll accumulate those things is even stronger when it doesn't define you. That's one of the paradoxes. It's powerful, too. It's extremely powerful. Okay, so back to this chapter, the need to be. Let me get the phone number again. I think I have a little less than half an hour left. If you guys want to get in a question or a comment, it's not too late. Oh, you know what? I forgot to tell you guys that I set up the chat room, too. So if you're listening online, there's a chat feature, and you can go to the chat room, and you can give me a message. Let me look over here and see if anybody, I didn't say anything about it. So I don't think anybody knew anything about it. But, yeah, there's a chat room. And you can click on it. You can type a question in the chat room, and I can see it. So if you're too shy to make the phone call, and that's cool, you know, if you don't feel like making the phone call. The other thing you can do is you can send me an email, and my email address is michellehollinger303@gmail.com. And I'll pull up my email right now just in case any of you want to send an email with a question, or if you want to, you know, ask a question, you can call in, and the number to call in is 646-595-2081, okay? So, yeah, we have about 30, a little less than 30, no, actually 25 minutes left. That would be a little less than 30 minutes, right? I crack myself up sometimes. So, yeah, if you want to call in with questions or comments about any of the chapters in part one, because, you know, as I said, this is the last chapter in part one of the book. So if you have any questions about any of the chapters that we've gone over, if you have any questions about any of the seven principles of the SOS or any other chapters, tonight is a good night to call in with your questions. So, yeah. Let me go back to this chapter, the need to be. Ooh, you know what? I'm going to give you guys a homework assignment. Gladys Knight sings this song. She did not write it. She wasn't the first person to sing it. And I had to Google it to discover that, because you could not tell me that she was not the original singer of that song, The Need to Be. But yeah, go on YouTube and find I think she's the version that I want you guys to listen. It's a live version. Tyler Perry used to have a talk show. I did not even realize that he did. I don't know if it was a late night show or not, but it was a short lived show. But Gladys Knight was on that show, and she sang her song, "The Need to Be." And the lyrics to that song are so beautiful and so powerful. One of the lines says, "I can't pretend to be something that I'm not, and I won't wear a mask." Whew, let that marinate. Just think about that for a minute and think about how some of us have gone through our lives, you know, pretending to be something that we're not and wearing a mask because of something going on in our external world. So, yeah, that's the homework assignment. Treat yourself to that video of Gladys Knight. Ooh, she has this beautiful white skirt and a jacket. And she just sings that song right there. And just listen to the words. Listen to the lyrics of that song. So, yeah, let me go back to another paragraph in The Need to Be. Breathing first. Okay. So let me go to the next page of it. Okay, so even if, you know, it appears that everything's going right in our life, right? You have a good job, your relationships are good, you know, everything's clicking, but you still have this inner urge for something more, and you can't quite put your finger on what the something more is. It's because that need to be has not materialized within you. And I'm telling you that spending time in the silence, spending time, you know, just with your own thoughts, spending time questioning that inner critic, spending time recognizing your worthiness, all of that will eventually just prepare you internally for that inner urge to reveal itself in such a way that, you know, that you ultimately quiet it by spending time in the silence. And what it does is if there's something in your external world that you are supposed to do, you are supposed to engage in because it's a part of your inner splendor, it's a part of your life purpose, the need to be and all of the work that leads up to it will guide you in the direction of that thing. You know, because it's one of those things where when you step into an experience that your need to be and all of this other internal work has led you to, when you step into it and it feels like home, it feels like oh my God, this is my first time here, but it just feels so familiar. It feels like I'm supposed to be here. It feels like I'm supposed to be doing this. You know, that's just a part of your inner splendor just pouring forth and manifesting into your life. And that's really how it's supposed to be. That is really how it's supposed to be. Let me see. On page 42 of that chapter, second paragraph, it says, "The secret to satisfying the longing exists within your sisterhood of self, which operates on the premise that everything that you need to be the woman that you are here to be is within you. Honoring your SOS expands your unique territory and fills it from the inside out by connecting with and ultimately unleashing your inner splendor." That's really what it all boils down to. We were born with this stuff inside of us. And life, you know, childhood experiences, adolescent experiences, you know, young adult experiences, life covered it, you know, to some degree or another. Life piled on top of it, you know, to some extent, and it got pushed down, but it didn't dissolve, it didn't go away. It's still in there, but it's up to us to do the work to connect with it and to pull it forth and to allow it to exist without apology and without explanation. That's what this need to be is talking about, where you get to that point where you just know unequivocally that you just have a right to be. You have a right to be who you are with all your quirks, all of your assets, all of your flaws, you know, all of your peculiar ways. You know, you start to understand why you are the way that you are. And that some people may be drawn to you and others may find it icky, and that's okay, you know. When I got to a point in my life where I recognized that not everybody was going to like me, that is so freeing. That is that is so freeing. And you know, it's, everybody's not supposed to like you. They're just not, you know. You have people in your life where you love, but you might not like them. And everybody's not supposed to. Let me not go off into that. But anyway, had to take that deep breath. All right, so next sentence says, what is this inner splendor, and where do I go to get one? As I said, you were born with it. You've had glimpses of it, moments of immersion into it that felt blissful, weird even. There's some times where you are engaged in something that you love, that causes you to lose track of time, that, you know, it has a meditative quality because, you know, you're so focused on doing whatever it is, you know, whether it's, you know, gardening, or if you're into like doing quilting or crocheting, or, you know, a word puzzle, or reading a book, or listening to music, or whatever the case may be, there's that something, and it may be some things that when you become immersed in it, you know, you can get this glimpse of your inner splendor. And because if you've not been in the habit of spending time in the silence, this may feel new to you. It may feel, you know, it may feel foreign to you. It may feel like, oh, my God, what is this, you know? But it's something that you deserve to have expand in your life, and it's something that you deserve to feel on a regular basis, you know? That is a part of accessing your inner splendor. That is a part of delving deeply into your life purpose, allowing it to take up a permanent place in your life, allowing it to just be something that, you know, is on your mind when you go to sleep at night, and something when you wake up in the morning you are grateful to greet. It's supposed to be a part of your life to a large extent, not the small fleeting moments, you know, that we get when we're not spending the time in the silence on a daily basis. Right? So, yeah, that need to be really, 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 really powerful. All right, the next paragraph says, oh, I was still in the same paragraph. It is the unidentified urging that feels so elusive, so unattainable, so out of your reach. And here's another paradox. It appears unreachable because you've been looking for it in the wrong places. And that goes back to that chapter about disconnect to connect, how important it is to turn off the external stuff and to spend time in the silence and to spend time with yourself, you know. I talk a lot about spending time in the silence, but it's also about dating yourself, taking yourself on a date, taking yourself and enjoying, you know, things around your city that, you know, that bring joy to you, you know, exploring new things by yourself, taking yourself out to lunch, taking yourself out to dinner, taking yourself out to breakfast, doing things with yourself that bring you joy. And I'm about to put her on blast because my daughter, Alexandra, just walked into the room, and she's twerking and doing some other gyrations and craziness and trying to distract me, and she succeeded because she got me laughing. And that's one reason why I love that girl so much, because she has her mama's craziness. Yes, she does. So, yeah, what was I saying? Spending time with yourself. Yeah, if you're one of those people who likes to go to the beach and just hang out, you know, and just spend some time with yourself, just find different ways just to nurture you, just to be with you, just to recognize just how valuable and awesome and powerful you are. And that's what happens, you know, when you spend the time in the silence and you start tapping into that inner splendor. And when you do it often enough and you go deep enough, there's going to come this day that I talk about in this chapter where once you recognize, I'm sorry, the only way to reach it is by going within in the silence a lot, often enough that it recognizes you, that you recognize each other. And I'm telling you that once you get to that point where you recognize this sacred space inside of you, this inner splendor, and you get there in the silence, and the more you go in the silence, and there are going to be times when you're in the silence where you're just going to feel, I can't really describe how it feels, but you're going to know it for yourself. You're going to know that you've hit that spot, that sacred spot where the universe, where God, where spirit is pouring this wonderful wisdom, this wonderful energy through you. You're going to know it, right? And when you hit that spot, it's addictive, because you're going to want to continue to hit that spot. So that's a lure. That's an incentive to go into the silence on a daily basis. And the more you do that, the more, you know, it becomes familiar to you, and you just start to get these insights. You know, you start to get this direction, you know, about where your life is supposed to go. It becomes crystal clear the more you spend time in the silence, the more you start to engage that sacred space. It becomes crystal clear. You start to get this. You've always had intuition, you know, intuition. I just read somewhere, you know, what intuition, when you think about what is tuition? Tuition has to do with gaining knowledge. You pay your tuition to gain wisdom and knowledge, and ultimately to get a degree of some sort, right? Intuition is, think about that. We're paying ourselves for this wisdom and this knowledge to reveal itself in us. And our intuition speaks to us all the time. It's one of the things that if you could nurture your ability to read your own intuition, to trust it, to listen to it, to allow it to guide you, oh my God, it directs you to some really good things, and it keeps you safe. It stops you from getting yourself into danger when you are able to listen to it. You know, sometimes we have something that happened in our life, and we're like, oh my God, something told me not to do whatever. It was your intuition. And the more you spend time in the silence, and the more you have an intention to engage your intuition, the more you are able to read it and recognize it and allow it to guide you. I said all that to say, what was I saying? Well, let me read the rest of this chapter, because I think that I was about to do that. Okay. Once you recognize each other, this going within will become a healthy obsession, taking its rightful place alongside breathing and brushing your teeth. And when you come to wonder how you went so long without this life-affirming habit, you will discover that the urge is identified, the longing is soothed, and your need to be is quieted because you've been so busy being. Yeah, that's real powerful. I think I said the word powerful like 90 times tonight, but that's what it is. And it's authentic power. It's authentic power. It's you owning your own power. It's you recognizing just how awesome and fabulous and amazing you are, and being in a position to, you know, just listen to your inner guidance and allow it to direct you to exactly where you need to go. And it becomes, the more you spend time in the silence, the clearer that inner guidance becomes. And that inner guidance is God. But if you have not gotten into the habit of spending time in the silence, if you've not gotten into the habit of, you know, spending time with your own thoughts, you know, paying attention to what you are thinking, you know, then you might miss out on some of the wonderful guidance, sacred instruction that is available to you and that wants you to go in a specific direction, you know. But it's never too late, and we can't beat ourselves up about what we didn't do in the past. I'm gonna keep saying that, because that's huge, you know. Beating ourselves up about what we didn't do in the past keeps us stuck, because it takes up energy that we could be using in the here and now to manifest the life that we want. And again, it takes work. We can't, you know, snap our fingers and just think that it's going to happen. It takes work. It does. But guess what? We are worth it. Each and every one of you is worth it. Absolutely, positively worth it. Okay? So one of the other things I want to say about the book is the book is really short. The book has, I think it has 80, with all the thank yous, the book has like 82 pages. Yeah, 82 pages. It's a really short book. And what I realize is that it's short by design, you know. I talk about how this book poured through me. I surrender to God when I write. Writing is my passion. It is my purpose. It is one way that I get to use my voice. And I surrender to God when I write. I have a prayer, a specific prayer that I say before I write anything, whether it's writing my articles for the South Florida Times, writing my books, writing my screenplays, whatever I write. And I write in my journal, whenever I write. I get into his space, his sacred space, and I allow God's words to pour through me. And what I realize is that this book is short by design, because this book is designed to introduce you to your inner self, to your inner splendor, to introduce you to your sisterhood of self, right? And I mentioned at the top of the show that some of the feedback that I get from women is that they're rereading, they read the book and they find themselves reading it over and over and over again, you know, in addition to buying additional copies for their sister friends. But what the book does is again, it introduces you to yourself. It introduces you to your inner splendor. And if there are certain chapters that you are particularly drawn to, what happens when you start to spend time in the silence is you will be directed to additional resources to help you to further develop and nurture that particular area that is resonating with you, right? So if you are particularly drawn to understanding how to, you know, to maximize the quality of your thoughts and words, you'll be drawn to other books that go even deeper into that subject. You'll be drawn to, you know, maybe classes or workshops or seminars. You'll be drawn to something on TV. You'll be drawn to, you know, a magazine article. You'll be drawn to other things that can take you deeper into whatever, you know, subject in this book really resonated with you. And so that's one of the things that I realized about the brevity of this book. It's designed to introduce you to certain things. And the things that have a deep impact on you, you know, that really, you know, cause you to sit and wonder, okay, let me give this need to be. Let me give this worthiness thing, you know, some more thought. Let me think about this whole sisterhood of self thing some more. Now, there are not any other books that can take you deeper with the sisterhood of self. And, you know, I'll give you guys a little heads up. That's the title of my next book, The Sisterhood of Self, because what I'm recognizing and what Spirit is showing me is that there's some more information that I can go deeper with the sisterhood of self, and that's a whole book. That is a whole book in and of itself. But what I was saying about the brevity of this book, how short this book is by design. And, you know, it's a quick read because it doesn't take that much time to actually get through the entire book. But it's a longer read because, like I said, women are rereading the book, and I find myself rereading the book as well. So, yeah, it's a powerful book because sisterhood is important. And the older I get, the more I realize just how important sisterhood is. It's amazing. It's really, you know, it's a gift. It's a gift to be a woman, and when you recognize how powerful and how beautiful sisterhood is, it makes being a woman even more special, because we're not in this alone, you know. To be a woman and not recognize the beauty of other women, you know, is we shortchange ourselves if we don't give ourselves that gift. And starting next week, we go into part two, which is Sister to Sister, So Without. And it starts off with a beautiful poem called The Sisterhood Exchange. And then the very, the first chapter is, what, Sister to Sister. And that's just a really brief one that talks about what starts to happen after you've activated your sisterhood of self. And, you know, you start to nurture your inner world, if you will. And once you experience that need to be within yourself, once you recognize, you know, the sacredness of sisterhood, this thing with other women, it goes to a different level, and that happens, you know, almost on autopilot too. You know, you start to recognize that, you know, you just are happy when another woman excels and another woman is successful or whatever, you feel this joy, you know. And it if it's not something that you've been accustomed to, it might feel a little bit weird, but it's a good thing. It's a really, really, really good thing. And it is one of those things that makes sisterhood so doggone sweet. It really makes sisterhood sweet. And so that's essentially what this whole book boils down to. You know, we've gone through part one, and so, yeah, that gears us up to begin to have the conversation about sister to sister and how we interact with other women, you know, because when enough of us get it, when enough of us can embrace, you know, the highest level of sisterhood, we change, our families change, our communities change, and our world can change. It really can. It really and truly can. And that's really my prayer. That's really my prayer. I know that ultimately this book will have the impact that God has already revealed to me that it will have. And I know that, you know, as more and more women pick it up and, you know, start to read it, that it's gonna have this ripple effect. It really is. And the conversation that I really want to see us have about sisterhood, it will take place. And it's going to take place on a national level. Take my word for it, because this is in divine order. This is in divine order for us to have this high level, high quality, immersed in love, immersed in joy, immersed in gratitude conversation about sisterhood. That's the kind of conversation that we're supposed to have. That's the kind of sisterhood exchange we're supposed to teach to our daughters, not so much by telling them that this is how you're supposed to engage with other women, with other girls, but by showing them, just by living it. Because what we say speaks so loudly that what we do, I mean, it, you know, and I said that wrong. What we do speaks so loudly that what we say can't even be heard. That's powerful. That whole action speaks louder than word philosophy. Yeah, our daughters see what we do. They see the way that we interact with other women. They see whether we gossip or not. They see whether, you know, when a woman is successful, whether we, you know, we have something snotty to say or whether we are genuinely happy for her. They see that. They see it, and that's how they learn about sisterhood. That's how they learn, you know, how they will engage in sisterhood. And when we get it, we give them such a gift. And I talk about in part two, the very first sisterhood exchange that we have as little girls is with our mothers, and how powerful that relationship is, because the relationship with our mother, with our mothers, sets the tone for our sisterhood of self, whether it's active or inactive, and then how we interact with other women. It sets the tone for how we think about ourselves. It sets the tone for really so much of who we are. And, you know, whether our mothers were, you know, whether they had an active SOS or not, our mother is a gift to us, and I can't wait to talk about that chapter, because even if we had a mother who had an inactive SOS, this chapter that talks about, you know, our first sisterhood exchange with our mothers, it will shine light on why, even if your mom had an inactive SOS and she may have done things, you know, in your relationship that stunted your growth or that somehow blocked your ability to experience your authenticity, even if that was the case, this chapter shows you why you still owe her a debt of gratitude. Debt of gratitude. My English teacher wants me to enunciate. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to getting into part two next week, sister to sister. Spread the word, you know. If you listen to the show, you know, let a few other women know about the show. You know, if you're on Facebook, post it on your Facebook page. I send out a text reminder every week for those of you whose numbers I have. If you would like to be included on that list, you can send me your telephone, your cell number by email, and I'll add you to the text reminder list, and I'll make sure that you get that reminder every week. And then you can also, you know, do the same thing to remind the sister friends in your life to tune in so we can have this high-level, high-quality conversation about sisterhood. So with that, I think that's it. There I go breathing. Yeah, I'm going to sign off. And I want to thank you guys again for hanging out with me for another episode, another session of the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. I'll be with you again next week on Wednesday at 7:30 for another chapter. Again, we'll be going into part two, Sister to Sister, and talking about these wonderful opportunities to connect with other women at a really high level, at a really high level, the level of sisterhood that we deserve to experience. So thank you again for tuning in, and enjoy the rest of your night and the rest of your week. Have a fantastic evening. Peace.